So some of the things that you shared prompted memories for me that I wanted to share with you. I remember I'd been in program less than 10 years, and as you know, my progress was rather slow. So I remember being in the kitchen of the house two houses ago and walking up to a line in the linoleum and saying, on that side is not abstinence, on this side is abstinence, and what I want is over there. And I'm going over there. I'm walking across the line. And it scared me. It's like, you knew. You consciously made a decision to walk across that line. What if you don't get back across that line again? I didn't think of that. It scared me. And it was a really important part of my progress and program. To do that consciously as opposed to unconsciously was progress. And I give myself credit for it, and I rejoice when I hear people say, oh my God, I knew what I was doing and I did it. Yes. Welcome to reality. Welcome to being awake while you practice your compulsion, because you cannot be sufficiently motivated to stop until you are aware how crazy it is. It's like, that's just not sane. I remember it must have been Thanksgiving because it was a big meal, and my mom was there and my little boys and my husband and I don't know who else, and we had the big spread, and I had my rational portions because everybody was there. And I just wanted them to all go away. And we had a living room upstairs, so I wanted them to go away and upstairs so that I could clean up. You guys know what I'm talking about. I was so excited. I mean, I don't even remember having a conversation over dinner because I was so distracted by what I was going to eat as soon as these people left. So I shepherded them all upstairs, and I was walking back towards the kitchen when all of a sudden I woke up. The trance ended just briefly, and I thought, holy cow, this feels evil. I am in the clutches of food, and I don't have a clue what to do, how not to do this. Okay, what do they say in meetings to do? Oh, make a phone call. No effing way I'm not doing it. Okay, you don't have to make a phone call. Relax. What else have you heard in meetings? I'm standing just at the threshold of the kitchen. Well, pray. Okay. On your knees. Oh, no. Now. All right, well, if it's that or make a phone call, I'll get on my knees. So I got on my knees in the doorway to the kitchen, and I can't remember. I said something like, okay, help. I don't know how to do this. I'm scared. I don't want to eat everything that's left. I'm perfectly capable of doing that. Help. And I got up off the floor feeling kind of embarrassed, like somebody had seen me. And my next conscious thought was, as my hand closed the refrigerator door and all the dishes were done and all the food was put away and I hadn't licked my fingers, I'd had nothing. I was like, oh my gosh, it worked. I didn't know that could work. I'm going to do this all the time. And it does. It works. And what I've learned, I don't have to mean it. Help me. Crossing my fingers, crossing my toes. Help me. And the obsession gets lifted. God needs the tiniest crack in my life to make a huge difference. The tiniest little opening. If I can just give him just the tiniest little opening, I get blown open. But only if I'm here. Which is the beauty of staying. Thank you for doing that and demonstrating that for us. Because if we don't keep coming back, we won't be here when the miracle happens. Really, the only thing we need to do is keep coming back. I tell you, get a sponsor. I tell you, find a form of exercise that works for you. I tell you, work steps. Keep coming back. If that's all you do, you are making progress. Huge progress. Our disease is progressive. Over time, it gets worse, never better. Our recovery is progressive. Over time, it gets better and better. gradually for me, but it gets better and better, and I believe in it. It works, but only if I keep coming back. There have been times in my program where meetings became so painful that it was really a struggle for me to come back. There was a period of time, Saturday morning meeting was my home meeting, and there were a couple of people who came in, and they sat together every week, and if I mentioned my two sons, one of them would roll her eyes, and they'd kind of like buddy up, like I was oversharing. Like, you know, you're supposed to take the mess to your sponsor and the message to your meeting, and if you do too much detail in a meeting, you're oversharing. And so I struggled with, I would pick up all of this body language, and I finally called the leader and said, I want to talk to you about the body language I'm seeing in meetings. I'm really confused. I'd like to hear what you're thinking and feeling. I have no idea what you're talking about. Oh. So I dropped my Saturday morning meeting because for me it was principles before personalities, and my sanity came before her personality, and it took me a really long time to get to that point because I was like, principles before personalities, you have to keep coming back. Like, principles before personalities, if going to a meeting hurts me more consistently than not going, go to a different meeting. Start a different meeting if you have to. Go to a different meeting. Put yourself first. Years later, they had left, and the follower, the sidekick, came back and said, I want to apologize to you. We were awful to you in the meetings. I'm like, it wasn't just me. It wasn't just in my head. She's like, no, we, you know, like, after meetings have powwows about how you just overshare it all the time, and, you know, giving us so much detail about your son's lives was just inappropriate. And I was like, I wasn't sure. I didn't trust myself that I was reading this right, especially with the I don't know what you're talking about response to my request to communicate. So for me, that's also another one of my things that I've learned in program, the ripple effect. If I'm working my program, it impacts everyone in my life. The further away, the smaller the impact, but it impacts my clients directly all the time. Because I am very open and heartfelt, and I can be present in a way that I can't be when I'm not working my program. And there's a value in that. I had a situation at the law firm I used to work at. I think there were 6 or 7 lawyers, and they hired a new associate. I was the senior associate, and they hired a guy behind me. And within a very short period of time, I realized we had a problem. And so I began to talk about the problem. I'd go to the partners and say, we have a problem with this new guy. And they would say, you need to learn to get along with the new guy. I'd say, well, but I do get along with him. He's fine. He has some habits that impact our clients negatively and really impact our staff negatively. And they're like, you need to learn to get along. Finally, I realized there was a rat in the corner, and I was jumping up and down pointing at the rat, but they could only see me jumping up and down. They couldn't see the rat. It's like, okay, so it took me 6 years of reading, 83 to 88 in the big book. 6 years. I read it every single day, from the promises to the end of the chapter, basically steps 10 and 11, and I'll go into those in more detail when I get to them. But the part that got me to the step 10 list of questions includes, have I kept something to myself which should have been discussed with another person at once? I read it every single day for 6 years while I struggled with this issue. And my kids would go, don't you know what those pages yet say yet, Mom? No, I'm reading them every day. So I was reading it, and that sentence was there. It hadn't been there before. And I realized, I need to stop talking to the partners. I need to talk to him. Oh. So I said, all right, how do you do that? I'm good at talking about him. Now I get to go talk to him. And it kind of has this ring of, like, profundity and honesty and directness that I like, but I don't know how to do it, and I'm not very comfortable, and I don't want to be the bull in the china shop that I get accused of being all the time. So I wrote him a letter. It was the most loving letter I've ever written. It says, these are the things that I see are problems. This is what I would like you to do about it. And if you don't do that, I will be asking the partners to remove you as a partner at the end of the year at our partnership meeting. And what I didn't tell him, but I did, because I had to see my part. I had to get to my part in it. And my part was, I enabled it. I didn't know it until I stopped. But because he impacted our staff, because his clients would come in mad, and our staff would run around and try to fix it, and I'd help them. Because it wasn't fair to them to pay the price for his actions. So I was like, they would come running into my office, this was the pattern, and I'd say, I'm so sorry, but this is happening, and you're going to have to talk to a different partner. Because I'm having me work on this is not helping. And they looked like I betrayed them. And I did. I broke our complicity. So within 3 weeks of me saying to him, this has to change, and I'm willing to help you, I'll show you how I do it. We have practiced the same areas. Mine doesn't result in the friction yours does. Come, I'll show you. I'm not condemning you to Hades. I just need you to communicate. Within 3 weeks of me starting to say, I can't help you, staff member. I'm really sorry, but you're going to have to bring it to somebody else's attention. We had an emergency partnership meeting. I did not call it. And he was told, we have a problem. It's you. These are the things that have to change. And I'm sitting in that meeting praying through the entire meeting. Okay, God, your way, your will, your words, not mine. And what came out of my mouth was, I'll help you. I'll help you. I'll mentor you. I'll show you how I do what we do, and you can do it your way. But there are some things that need to change. And he looked like I had thrown him a life preserver, and we still have a friendly relationship. He didn't survive in the firm. But we still have a friendly relationship because I was the only person who went to him and honestly said, this is what's got to change. It was respectful. It wasn't easy for either of us. And that honesty piece, when you get confronted, whether it's nicely or not nicely, when I get confronted, when I feel myself go, the dragon comes out, like, oh, shoot, there's something in here I got to look at. Darn. That means they're right about something that I don't want to look at. And so I get to be aware of my reaction when someone says something to me. And the beauty of that is also that when somebody says something to me and I don't have the reaction, there's no truth in it. There's nothing there for me to look at. I was visiting with a gentleman I didn't know very well, and we were having some very deep conversation because that was the workshop we were in kind of prompted that. And he said, well, you gave up on your marriage. And I thought, oh, that's so weird. I have no reaction to that at all. It's like, yeah, that's a reasonable perspective. It's just not mine. I did give up on my marriage. That's a reasonable perspective. I gave it all I had before I gave up. And so there was no hook for me in that statement, even though it was his truth. And it could have been a hook for me. So for me, that's my opportunity to sift through where I get to do some fourth step work, which we're going to talk about right after lunch, is when there's a hook, when there's something that goes, ew. I have that cat in the mirror reaction, ew. It's like, oh, there's something there for me to look at. It's not fun. But that's where the juice is. That's where the recovery is. So.